You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Latter Day Takes. So good to be back after a one-week hiatus, and do we ever come back with a vengeance. However, we actually had a whole other episode taped with our moms specifically as the guests in honor of Mother's Day. We did that last Friday, and then, lo and behold, some technical difficulties took place, which was highly unfortunate. However, we think we can maybe recover it. That won't be on today's episode, but once we do, we'll definitely drop that because it was a great episode we thought all together. Brian and I actually kind of do a little recap today for the episode just to kind of give you a little overview of that. Other topics we also cover include the fact that I'm babysitting my nieces and nephews for about 2 week period and how that's been going, some NBA, NHL playoff recaps. We cover a little Bryce Harper topic that was given to us by a good friend of mine who pointed an interesting stat out involving his recovery, which was fun, that got us talking a little bit. And then, like I said, we talk about the highlights from the mom's episode, and then we talk about the 60 Minutes Church Finances segment, which I think is the best part of the episode. I think Brian and I did a pretty good job kind of essentially giving the perspective of active members of the church and how we think about this. Anyway, then we also cover a little bit of people we can't be friends with, and then go into spiritual thoughts. Anyway, love y'all. So glad to be back. Missed you. And we'll catch y'all on the other side.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mormons are really nice people.
Totally nice.
They are the best cult.
Have you ever, under the influence of alcohol, questioned the teachings of the Mormon church?
Well, these Mormons are so nice.
Everybody's so nice. Everybody's so nice in Utah.
They're all Mormon, right?
Yeah.
So they're not drinking. And they're like not cussing. They're like, Slovis, you stink.
I'm afraid it was the Mormons. Yes, the Mormons were the correct answer.
Because God loves Mormons and he wants some more.
Shout out to the Latter-day Saints.
All right, we're back, man. It's been 2 weeks. My bad. I'm going to take the blame.
It's fine. We both have lives, you know? We got to live them, you know? Been busy on both ends.
I was in Smashville, Tennessee. I don't know if they call it that, but they should.
They don't. They call it Nash Vegas.
Is that true?
That is true.
That actually makes a ton of sense because it is a country version of Las Vegas. There's no question about that. Real quick, we probably need to mention a new sponsor today. Costco mattresses delivery.
I love it.
This episode is brought to you by the Costco mattress delivery guys who patiently waited outside my house for a few minutes for me to come home so that they could actually deliver the mattress to the room two floors above me. Which I appreciated because I wouldn't have wanted to do that. So
I appreciate it as well.
Shouts to them.
shout out to Costco and their amazing delivery service and should have taken the plastic wrap as well, right?
They didn't. I noticed that.
Actually. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
They're supposed to take everything.
Yeah. But if you're looking to buy a new mattress and have it delivered right to your room, Costco has your back. How's that for an ad read?
They do. There we go.
Thanks,
back Costco.
Thanks, Costco. Back to Nashville, though. It was interesting. That was my first time out there, and I went because a bunch of my friends went to the Taylor Swift concert. I did not.
You went to. Stop lying.
I did not, man.
You know you went. He went, everybody. Okay.
More specifically, I offended a lot of people by saying, even if I had a free ticket, I wouldn't go. They were like, how dare you blaspheme the queen?
And I'm like, I love that out of you because I love that take. I would do the same.
It's like one, I was 100% positive. That was one of those things where I would actually hate getting offered a free ticket because I would feel bad telling him no. I'd be like, no, so sorry. I don't want it.
She came to Vegas.
Yeah.
And my mom, sister, and nieces went. Had a great time. My best good friend, Clayton George, went as well. The only reason he went was because his wife was going. And they were going with other, you know, married couples. And like, by all means, okay, we get it, right? And that was the one thing. He's like, dude, if Haley wasn't going and we were going with this group of people, he's like, you better believe it, I would not be going. But then he goes, she does put on a good show, though. I would go, whatever, man. I was like, I don't care. I doubt it. I was like, I'm just giving you crap anyways.
I don't doubt it. Yeah, that's so funny, dude. Because, yeah, the three guys that were my buddies that were out there with me went.
And right.
They actually could not have had a better night because it almost got rained out. And so it got delayed like 3 hours. And in that 3 hours time.
It was outside?
It was outside. It was in the Titan Stadium. Yeah.
Okay.
And they, it was actually hilarious. It was funny to watch this from the cheap seats too, because I was like, I'll probably go out to like a sports bar or something and watch game, the second game of the playoffs, just alone, experience a Tennessee sports bar. I'm all about that. That'd be fun. Mm-hmm. And, but the thing kept getting pushed back. The girls had left to go early to the stadium to buy merch and get in their seats and just be prepped, ready, so they don't miss any opening or anything like that. And in that time period, the guys that stayed behind, not only were they dry and not huddled up beneath the bleachers, cold and just miserable, they got to watch both NBA playoff games. They took an Uber right to the stadium, walked right in, found their seats in 10 minutes, and at the end of the 10 minutes or whatever, I said that weird, they got to their seats. Right when they got to their seats, Swifty took the stage. And like, it could not have worked out better for them. And she played from like 10:30 to like 1:30, which honestly, props to her. That, like, yeah. Like, I don't obviously don't like Taylor Swift. I like some of her music, mainly her old stuff, like her old stuff, like her country stuff, I think is still holds up very well. But mm-hmm. I think she as a person, she's completely transformed who I thought she was, and I'm just not a fan of that new transformation. But I credit where credit is due for her to do that for her fans. It's pretty baller of her.
Yeah, I mean, can't take any offense from anybody, right? Like, I'm not the biggest fan of a lot of people, but at the same time, it's still real respect, real. You know what I mean? Like,
for sure,
she still knows what she's doing. She's, you know, great artist and things like that. I don't agree with people that, you know, force things upon other people.
Well,
that's all.
What's funny too is that
I'll leave it at that.
We kind of, yeah, fair enough. We had this conversation too because there were some girls on that trip that were like diehard Swifties, mm-hmm. like wanted to do everything Taylor Swift. And some of me and the guys were talking about it. We're like, that's kind of weird, right? And then one of the guys was like, I don't know. I look at it as if like my NFL team made it to the Super Bowl. And then I started thinking about it and I'm like, that's, I actually love the rhetorical aspect of what you're doing. Like, you're reflecting on kind of what you would do in a similar situation. I appreciate that. Kind of what would you do in their shoes? But then I realized something about myself. I don't think I'm a big fan of anything to that level. Like, I just don't.
BYU.
No. Honestly, like.
No?
If BYU made
it. BYU made it to the national championship.
It wouldn't be a guarantee that I went. It wouldn't be.
That's a lie. I'm calling boldface lie right there.
I think it's baldface lie, by the way, but regardless.
Bold.
Okay.
All right. Bold or bald? Are we going to dispute this? I don't know. I thought it was boldface. I think
it's baldface lie.
I think it's bold.
We can. Good thing we have Google that works quickly. And it is.
Why would it be a baldface?
Yeah. A baldface lie.
What does that even mean? It's bold.
It is. One that is obvious, unambiguous, and readily apparent. I don't know why. Like the visage I think it's visage, of a person unobscured by facial hair. That's where it comes from. Bald-faced is a pejorative term. Specifically means shameless or brazen, which is the sense rep. I don't know what that is, but I'm just reading from Google. Anyway.
The term bold-faced lies refers to an obvious, shameless lie, one that the liar makes little or no effort to disguise as the truth. Bold-faced lie means the same thing as two other similar phrases, bald-faced lie and barefaced lie.
Yeah, you're right. Both work. Look at us.
Look at us.
This is the second time I think we went through something like this.
I'm going to change to barefaced lie.
You're going to zag?
really just throw everybody off. They're going to be like, barefaced lie? What is that? I'm like, it all means the same. How about that?
I'm just going to totally zag from all this. Honestly, I kind of respect it. So yeah, we had that conversation, and maybe I am lying to myself, but I don't know, man. Like, even if I did, I don't know. I'm just not a sycophant of like anything besides Jesus, my friend. Don't know. here's the thing. I'm not even being flippant about that. Like that is number one in my life. He really is. The time, like, be more and more zealous. Here it is. This is me being zealous. Like, I love Jesus.
I love
him, man. He's an amazing older brother, and he's done so much for us. And if I keep talking about him more, I'm going to get more and more emotional because that's just what happens to me. But anyway, so Nashville overall success. With that said, my key takeaway is that I don't ever really want to go back. I experienced it once, and that was good enough because if you don't drink or absolutely love live music, and I like live music, but I don't need it like all the time, then you're kind of good. Like, once is good enough. I didn't need it. Yeah. I didn't need it more. And that's kind of the Vegas aspect of that you mentioned, is that, you know, if your lifestyle doesn't really match up with it, you don't really need to experience it. And that's why Vegas is good for the shows for me, the food. That's about it.
You wouldn't put people into that one there, bud? Sick, man. Unbelievable. This is just... I go to Salt Lake for the mountains and the lakes. That's it.
The way you said that was so sincere, man. That killed it. You like had this blank look on your face, and you're just like, you wouldn't go there for the people? Of course, dude. I would freaking, if you lived in Death Valley, dude, I'd come see my guy. So no worries there.
Bold face lie. Bare face lie.
Bare face lie.
Bare face lie.
All right.
Man. So you wouldn't move to Nashville?
No, I wouldn't. Do you know anybody that would?
Oh, man.
Yeah. Not
all right.
Not
well, scene. Duly noted.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah. So I'm.
So you come back from Nashville, right? Damn. And you're on babysitting duty now. For 2 weeks?
Yeah. Is that right? Well, now another week. But yeah, it started last. I didn't start till like, so my sister and brother-in-law are out of town. They're going to Israel, like this 12-day trip. They left last Friday. I didn't really start until Saturday. And they're going to be back a week from tomorrow. So yeah, another week about. It was a quick turnaround. My life has just been go, go, go. But yeah, I'm on the front lines of uncle duties. I'm acting like a parent for these kids. It's been fun for the most part. Like it hasn't been not fun, but it's just, you know, it's solid. It's good. It's fun.
Well, I think you should, because you're recording from
their place. Yeah.
Their place. I feel like you just need to go ahead and just make that change because that backdrop is beautiful.
It is kind of nice. They got a bunch of books on their built-in bookshelf in their office, little nook thing. And
it is beautiful.
I was actually...
Let your sister know.
I will.
But I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, and they're big readers, man. My sister's all about it. My brother-in-law's all about it. And that's why I love talking with them. I have great conversation. You'll meet them at some point. You'll appreciate
it. Maybe.
Nope, no maybes.
If I want to come and visit the people of Salt Lake or not.
Yeah, we'll see if they're good enough for your time.
But
all right, so my sister saw this post, right? I didn't really don't go on Instagram a whole lot. Don't really use the socials as much as I probably should or shouldn't. I don't know. Depends on the way I'm feeling, you know, any given Sunday.
Totally fair.
But was this an email that was sent to the, or a little notebook that was sent to the kids? Explain what this post was, because it was absolutely hilarious after my sister showed it to me.
Oh, your sister showed it to you? That's funny.
Yeah.
I didn't know that's how you saw it. But, yeah, so she left some notes on the fridge, like has the schedule on there, has numbers, has like the daily schedule and the weekly schedule. And then near the bottom of one of the pages, she says, "Everybody," in all caps. And she says, "Do your jobs and clean up after yourselves. So far, pretty good. Get along and help each other out. Also pretty good. That's been great. That's made my life very easy." And then the last line is, "Remember, the goal is that Harper still wants to have children after watching you guys."
And so, I loved that part because I'm like, 100%, because I could not imagine doing it. And now, granted, ages are different right now, right? So you have high school all the way down to what?
All the way down to 8 years old.
Okay.
He's in second grade.
High school to, okay, so second grade.
Yeah.
Now, the high school kids should be doing a lot of the watching, right? Now you're on.
Yeah, he's
on
great.
Drop-off duty.
Yeah, right? He's the only one that can drive, but even then, like, I can't solely depend on him. Like, that's where I step in. Like, I took one of them to the store yesterday because he was playing a game with his little brother. And I was like, just keep playing your game, dude. I'll take her to the store because she needed stuff for class today. But, yeah, so it's like definitely putting me on the front lines of what parenting kind of looks like, but hasn't been bad. It's been relatively easy. But, yeah, it's what I posted on Instagram was I underlined that part, that last line, and I said, mm-hmm. "Jury is still out."
Yeah. So good. Because I couldn't imagine. I'm telling you right now, if I had to go watch, how many kids? Four?
Five.
Five. Yeah, so I mean, I'd have to go watch my sister's kids before. I mean, that's four of them. But that's, what, 11 to 2?
Oh, that'd be way harder. That'd be way harder than what I'm doing. Like, not even close. Just by ages alone. I mean, the self-sufficiency that I'm dealing with is through the roof. And that would hardly exist in your scenario.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oof. I couldn't do it. Yeah. I'm fun uncle, man. Okay? You come hang out. We'll hang out. We'll do some fun stuff.
Well, I'm a fun uncle. Like, that's why I think they wanted me to do this.
I know you are, but what I'm saying is, like, at the same time, like, you still got to be serious uncle at the same time.
I'm such a fun uncle. My sister, who listens to the pod, shout out to Eden, sent me a shirt one time that said Funkle, which was not a swear word, by the way. And it even had a definition of it on there. I can't remember what the definition was, but I think you can kind of put it together.
Yeah. Come have fun and then do all the things that you want to do with uncle. And then you go on your way as soon as you start getting in a bad mood. Go back to your parents.
Dude, let's actually talk about this for a second, because you bring up a great point that some people completely miss. And that's that when you're an uncle or an aunt, it is all the benefits of having kids without any... I mean, okay, not all the benefits, right? I don't think you have that dopamine rush just by seeing your own children. Like, there's something magical about that, I'd imagine. But pretty much all the benefits of having kids without any of the costs. Some literal costs, but then, like, emotional, the stress, the anxiety. It's like, you said, you just kind of check out when you want to. And at the same time, like, you can come in 11th hour, and they just think you're this coolest person. Dude, do you know how many times I've disciplined these kids since I've been here? None. Like, I'm that's that, and that's not my role. Like, I know in this scenario, like, I might have to put my foot down a little bit more than normal. And the only thing I really care about is that they don't try and get away with anything just because it's me. It's like, hey, like, probably keep their parents in tune. But other than that, like, I'm not, they've stayed up, dude. Luke, this second grader, His bedtime's at 8:30, and that was on one of the things that the task lists. Like, make sure Luke gets him at 8:30. Yeah, he definitely went to bed at 9:30 last night. And a lot of it was just because I kind of lapsed on it. It's like, I kind of forgot.
Oh, crap. It's 9:30.
I didn't catch it till like after 9, till like one of, I think my nephew came in. He's like, hey, by the way, do you want to like maybe, because we have been doing prayers every night, prayers and a spiritual thought. And that's, nice. Which is standard in their family. And I'm just, you know, keeping that going. And he's like, hey, did you want to do that? And I was like, oh, yeah, for sure. And then I see there, and I'm like, oh, gosh, Luke probably needs to go to bed. And I see Luke. Luke's, like, playing on the computer. And I'm like, Luke, it's way past your bedtime, bud. And he's like, oh, it is? He's just pleading innocence. Of course, I'm not kind of like, I didn't care at all. He's fine. And it's stuff like that. Like, I love not having to enforce that. They love that, too. So,
right. Well, I felt bad. We were over at my sister's house on Sunday for Mother's Day. And, like, the hockey game just started at 7. They had, I think their bedtime's 8.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, like, I was getting ready to leave, and Brittany's like, no, stay, hang out. I'm like, the kids are going upstairs. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Because
I was with them for, like, 4 hours, yeah. Right? And I'm just like, oh, geez. But, dude, I'm the exact same way, though, with my nieces and nephews, right? Like, the biggest thing that, like, frustrates me is when they try to get away with something, right? Or they say something and then I hear it, and then all of a sudden you ask them like what happened, and they tell you something completely different. I'm like, no, that's not how it went down. Yeah. I mean, I got on my niece on Sunday about it, because Brittany tells Colton, the oldest, to go out and tell the girls to come in and eat, right? Colton goes, opens up the slider, says, hey girls, come in and eat, right? Just said that. Hadley, the youngest girl, goes, go away, Colton, we're playing. And I hear this, and I go, I open the door. I go, hey, get in here and eat. Colton was told by mom to come out and tell you guys to come in and eat. Okay? And they just, like, looked at me, and they came in and ate. Yeah, and I'm just like, yeah. Like, you can't, like, don't have an attitude with a kid, like, and now, granted, Colt probably shouldn't have said, hey, mom, you know, mom told me to tell you guys to come in and eat. But at the same time, like, you can't expect that out of a, you know, 11-year-old kid. Well, yeah, I'm the same way. Don't try and get away with things, because that's definitely a pet peeve of mine.
Yeah, that's the only thing is that I just don't want them to, like, learn bad behavior just because I'm around. Like, that's right. The big thing, where it's like, just because your parents aren't here and I'm around, like, I don't want it to, in other words, you got to play both sides. Like, you want them to like you, but you also want their parents to trust you.
Exactly.
So, you know, you kind of got to toe that line a little bit. But fortunately, neither side makes that hard on me at all. So, pretty easy stuff, all in all. You got a recap for us, dude? Some NBA, NHL updates?
I mean, we Golden Knights are going to the Western Conference Finals. That was solidified on Sunday, and then Dallas Stars won Game 7. Kind of nervous about that one, if I'm being completely honest. Peter DeBoer is the head coach for the Stars, former coach of the – he actually was the previous coach of the Golden Knights. And they have, I want to say – I know they have Miller, who was a former Golden Knight, and then they have three former Sharks that played under DeBoer while he was in San Jose as well. So if there was somebody I was rooting for last night, it was definitely the Kraken out of Seattle, but we'll see how that goes. Really excited, though. I mean, everybody was picking the Oilers against the Golden Knights, and I was just like, they have two guys. Like, they had Draisaitl and McDavid, obviously. You know, McDavid's all worlds, things like that. But I'm like, we're just gonna discount the, you know, the Marchessaults, the Smiths, the Carlsons, the Stones, the, you know, like Eichels. You know, it's crazy how deep the Golden Knights really can be. But should be a good Western Conference. I do love the fact, okay, and I noticed this on Sunday after the Golden Knights won their game against the Oilers. Now that Dallas has won, okay, you have Vegas. Okay, you have Dallas, you have Jacksonville, right? No, what is it? And it's not Jacksonville. It's West Palm area, Fort Lauderdale, because that's where the Florida Panthers play. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you have North Carolina, Charlotte. Four warm weather, non-hockey cities in the Western and Eastern Conference Finals. I absolutely love it. Like, it's
that
just
funny.
It's not supposed to happen, you know, but like, you've got Nevada, Texas, Florida, and North Carolina all represented, it all below the Mason-Dixon. Like, it's phenomenal. So all the, you know, Canadians are out, all the Northeast, Midwest, everybody's out. So should be, you know, interesting Western and Eastern Conference Finals, and hopefully a good result for the Golden Knights, and we'll go from there.
I saw a tweet. So, I saw a tweet that said, it had this video below it, and it said, it was like one of those like narrator, they didn't want Florida. And so you click on the video and you're like, what is this? And it's a bunch of Toronto Maple Leaf fans screaming outside somewhere going, we want Florida.
Yeah.
We want Florida. And no,
they want Florida to just come to Canada.
Yeah, for real. Exactly. They want to live in Florida.
Yes.
That's what they mean.
Yeah. Yes.
Make Canada Florida. Yeah.
Basketball-wise, you have 76ers lost. Not the best day in Philly for those fans.
That team's going to get blown up, I bet, dude. I bet Harden's gone.
Yeah, well, breaking news this morning, Rivers is gone.
Oh, that's no surprise. I didn't know that, so thanks for sharing.
Which sucks.
I think he's
a great coach.
I think so. I think he's a good coach. I don't know if he's really a championship caliber coach, though. I think part of the issue is, and like obviously he won one in Boston, but he might have, like, he maybe should have won another one, but didn't, you know. And so
he should have won one in LA,
and that
when
too.
He was with the Clippers.
Yeah, it's exactly right, because he's coached very talented teams, and he's not a bad coach by any means. But part of me wonders if he lacks the discipline necessary on his players to really hone in on some championships that he could have won when he didn't. I'm not saying he, like, it would have been hard to win with Harden and Embiid, honestly. Like, this year it would have been, I think. So I'm not necessarily blaming him.
They had it, though, man.
They did have it. And they could have won that series.
I mean, dude, game six, dude, Boston did not miss a shot in the first half. Like, it was a joke.
Yeah.
Like, they did not miss.
Tatum became otherworldly.
Holy cow, man. Yeah. And then Tatum turns it on in game seven, you know. I dropped 51, right?
Yeah, something like that.
It's just, it's crazy. So, I don't, what do we got? You got Denver and LA,
Denver,
and
LA.
Then you have Boston and Miami.
Yeah, Heat.
Yeah, so.
Which, honestly, the Sixers beat Boston in that series. Yeah, Miami is an 8 seed for a reason. Now, granted, they're the best coach team in the NBA, probably. Spoelstra's incredible. Mm-hmm. And you'd think that maybe Butler starts to wear down a little bit by then. With that said, Tyler Hero is probably going to be back, so that's interesting.
And playoff Jimmy is a real thing.
It is a real thing.
There was an article on that on ESPN about it, and I was just I ended up reading it. I was like, holy cow! Like,
I bet the numbers
are
insane.
Playoff numbers are absurd.
Yeah,
yeah.
That doesn't
like
surprise
he's a different breed. I mean, I relate it back to Bryce, like, because he's such a playoff guy too. Right, like, you look at Bryce's career playoff numbers, like, they're otherworldly type stuff. It's crazy, and everybody saw it last postseason, because he was playing so many, you know, games into the postseason, as opposed to when he was with the Nationals, it was one and done. But yeah, it's just Bryce has always been that way, right? Like, big game, like when he was in tournaments, things like that, like those championship games, he always tore it up, and it's just there's. I mean, Kobe, Michael, right?
It's
people
kind of
built
it's
different.
Kind of the big difference between star and superstar.
Yeah, I would agree.
You know,
I'd agree with
like
that.
When they, how they kind of show up when the time demands for it.
Yeah, yeah. But. So, I mean, Boston, I think, rolls, and I'm going to go with Denver. I think it's Boston, Denver.
I think Denver's going to win it.
Jokic is so good.
Yeah, I think Denver's going to win it all, personally. I think the Miami-Boston series could be a really fun one to watch, though. And so could LA-Denver. Like, we could actually have a pretty fun conference semifinals on both sides, because LeBron really is gunning for something. And when he's still he's no MJ. I will stand by that till the day I die. But he's still freaking LeBron. Like, he's still probably the second best basketball player of all time. And we're watching that play out in real time. And he's near the end of his career, and he's still doing unbelievable things. It's pretty impressive to see, quite frankly, just being objective, because I can't stand that guy. But call a spade, he's very, very, very good at what he does. And so that series could be really interesting. But
yeah. Other news in go ahead.
So I got to share this with you. A buddy of mine that listens to the podcast, shout out to Judson Meeks, sent me a text last week, and it had this quote. It was from, it was some tweet, I think, that said, Bryce Harper had Tommy John surgery and completely recovered from it since an Oakland A's starter has won a game.
I read this and I go, no way. Like, I literally like looked it up. It 100% right. They had won eight. Cause I was like, they've won eight games. Like, what are you talking about? Right. At that point. And I like look at it and all of their wins are from relievers. Right. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is phenomenal. Right.
Not phenomenal.
So looking that up before we started recording, it was broken on May 6th or May 5th by Kyle Muller after 32 game winless streak. 32 games into the season, they hadn't won a game. The starter, starting pitcher, had not won a game for the Oakland, soon-to-be Las Vegas Athletics.
That's insane, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, soon-to-be Las Vegas Athletics. Yeah, that's true. That's actually true. I think, like, that's really, really going to happen, it sounds like. But that's so...
Yeah, they just finalized another spot for the Tropicana, so big news on that.
Wow. Good for them. Yeah. So Billy Beane... Not going so hot for our guy, Billy Beane, huh?
No. And that, I'm telling you, that's my big concern about them coming to Vegas, dude. Like, yeah, you can move locations, things like that, but it's you can't change philosophies.
Are they changing ownership?
You really can't. No. Same owners, dude. Yeah, everything. It's going to be like you – they're not going to last here, man. Like, I'm sorry, but I don't see it happening. It's going to be 80 games down there, like – I don't know. We'll see. I mean, it's gonna be a lot easier for me to access it than I am with a minor league team, being out in Summerlin, me and Henderson. But it's like, man, like, I don't know. It's gonna be very similar to the Raiders, where you know it's gonna be predominantly road teams fans, and you know until they can put a winning franchise out and you know want to win, want to spend money and go from there.
That's where it's at. Because like. Yeah. Billy Beane's philosophy could actually really work with an ownership that shells out money, I think. Right? I mean, that's what Moneyball talks about. He was like saying, he's like, I can't do it. And so that's why he changed his philosophy. Now, granted, you combine the both, which is essentially what Epstein did in Boston, is that he took the Billy Beane philosophy. Now, granted, he didn't get it from Billy Beane. They both got it from the same guy that did the baseball almanac stuff. I can't remember his name at the top of my head, but Bill something.
Bill Self. Bill Swift.
No, not quite. Bill James, maybe? I think it might be Bill James. But Epstein was a believer in that same thing that Billy Beane was a believer in. He had the money to do it in Boston. He gets Boston their first World Series in 90 however many years. But
no, 102, no, that's the 107.
Cubs. The Cubs broke 100.
That's right.
The Red Sox were like 92 or 88 or something like that.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. I love the fact that he had a hand in both of those.
Yeah, that's incredible. That's incredible. Yeah. Honestly, that really speaks to his legacy. But anyway, and for those that are listening, this just because there's a lot of people that don't know sports, you know, that listen to this pod, and I just want to make sure they're aware. Theo Epstein was the general manager of the Red Sox that oversaw their first World Series in like 88 years, I think, and then some. He switched teams. He goes to the Cubs, who hadn't won in over 100. He got traded. I didn't know it was a trade. That's crazy.
Yeah. It was a trade, and I got a nugget for you after. Go ahead.
And they hadn't won a World Series in over 100 years. It was like pushing 110 or something like that.
Yeah.
And they win their first World Series. Yeah, under his purview. With him at the helm, making the trades, making the deals, and just like kind of trying to adopt this similar philosophy. And it's just – that's an unbelievable – that's so crazy. He's a relatively young guy still. I think he's like in his late 40s, early 50s. But anyway,
So when that trade was made, okay, because Theo was still under contract at the at that point, Boston let him basically let him walk, right? But there was, I want to say there were some players to be traded as well. But the biggest one was the player to be named later, okay, of this deal. The one and only Aaron Kirks, okay? He grew up in Vegas, one of my really good friends here in town, baseball guy. Played with him throughout high school. He played at Rival High or at Durango High School, but like played up with him through, you know, travel ball, scout ball, all that stuff. He goes to Air Force, transfers back his sophomore year. I was at Northridge my freshman year, obviously, and then transferred back to CSN. We both play together at CSN. He gets drafted by the Cubs, and he was the player to be named later in the Theo Epstein trade.
No way. That's funny.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
So little nugget.
Little nugget of, for sure.
Know, being able to know somebody that was the player to be named later that's in the awesome. Theo Epstein trade.
Good for you, man. speaking of baseball, though, apparently there was this like huge brawl, like almost big fight, two teams like flooding, like coming onto the field, which is always a big deal in baseball games when the bench is clear, a lot of players getting held back. I can't remember who exactly was involved, though. Did you hear about this?
Nope.
You didn't hear about this?
Nope.
Doesn't sound familiar.
What happened? Nope.
I don't know.
Bench is cleared. Did the bullpens run out of the bullpens? And they were all there.
Could have been, probably, but yeah, I guess one of life's mysteries. We'll never know who was involved in that and what happened. But
okay. It's for the birds. It's whatever.
That's all right. That's right, dude. For the freaking birds. All right, so we got a couple segments coming up here because we have some terrible news. Now, granted, I don't think it's terrible insofar as it's permanent. We recorded an episode with our moms for Mother's Day. We did it last Friday. Had a great time talking with both our moms at the same time, all four of us together, like an hour and a half of recording. Yeah. And really great nuggets shared by both women, and it was just a fun time to get on there and get them both talking with each other and talking about kind of what it was like, you know, not just raising us but just being mothers that have seen a lot happen and how that all kind of contextualizing that with the gospel and the church. So I don't know if we can access that episode because we had some technical difficulties, unfortunately, specifically from my mom's end, who was at my brother's place, not operating from the best service. And when you do these things remotely, you really kind of need the best of everything available. And so we're still looking at salvaging that, and it's still very possible. And if it does, we'll release the episode, obviously. But for now, we wanted to go through some of the highlights and talk about that.
Yeah, it was a phenomenal, like, hour and a half, just like Harper said. And I think the one thing that I got, or well, two things, your mom, as much as you fire me up with like gospel stuff, things like that, your mom's passion is like second to none. Like it was phenomenal listening to her and how like fired up she gets, right, about it, and like wanting to like just put out so much love into the world, right? And I think that was the one big thing that she kept preaching, was like not judging people and like just loving on them. And my mom reiterated it so much as well. I actually texted you after because my mom was fired up about it, and I go, thank you so much for having me and my mom both on there, because my mom's like bragging to my dad about how amazing it was to hear your mom's testimony, your testimony, being able to share hers own. And I go, the spirit is so strong in our house right now. It's absurd. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So I actually loved it. It was phenomenal. She did have, the other one that I came up with was, your mom talked about everybody having their own seasons.
Yeah.
And that's one of my favorite sayings. I absolutely love that. God's love, God's happiness, and God knowing better. That like ladder, right? She asks the question. She's like, does God love me? Does God want me to be happy? And do I know better than God? When it came to, I can't remember what she was relating it to. She had some questions. That's right. That's what it was.
She
had
some questions about.
Yeah. And I love that too. Cause it's like, it puts you in such a better perspective of life, right? Like if you ask those three questions, if you have any questions about anything, right? Like, why am I going through this? Why, you know, what, why are they doing this? You know, whatever it may be, right? Why is the church doing this? Right. Like we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But it's like, does God love me? Does God want me to be happy? And does God know better than me?
Yeah.
So, those are a couple of my highlights. But yeah, like I said, it was so cool to, you know, see our moms interact and,
yeah, it was.
You know, it was very much a spiritual high after that episode. And I hope, I really, really hope it all works out because, I think people will really, really enjoy it.
Yeah, I agree. And my mom really liked your 3/7 thing because she actually, the reason why that probably sounded a little bit familiar to me was because she kind of talks about that too. Like, you know, she's a marriage and family counselor, and so she sees a lot of different people from all walks of life, and she kind of uses that same philosophy when it comes to just improvement. Just like, don't, like you got to focus on the positives how you're improving. And when you have setbacks, you can't let those setbacks define your progress and define who you are as a person. So it's kind of similar to your theory of the 3/7 that you developed with your bishop. But yeah, the my mom said something really interesting too, and that I wonder if you caught that. I think you did catch it, but I wanted to hear more, not in the moment because, you know, we were really just, there was so much to talk about, but I want to hear more from her sometime about this because she said she really doesn't think that families won't be together.
Yes. My mom loved that.
I thought that was very fascinating because I had never heard her say that before.
Yeah.
Like we tend to think of it that like you can only be together if you're in the celestial kingdom. Right. But my mom is starting to push back on that kind of that. And who knows? I don't know if that's doctrine. So it's not her countering doctrine necessarily, but her philosophy now is, She doesn't think we'll be separated.
Yeah, no, because, and she said it because it was, God doesn't forget about us, right? And like, if we're trying to become like him, how are we going to forget about our family members at the same time too, right? I think that's what the extent of it was. But it's like, yeah, I love that perspective completely because it's like, yeah, like we're all going to be where we need to be and where we want to be, right? But we're not going to be forgotten about. Right. Like we're going to be together. We're going to be able to, you know, experience eternity together and everything like that. And yeah. Well, no matter what is done in this life, like we're going to be able to get there.
Well,
and I love that perspective too.
Along those lines, honestly, and this is just kind of getting me thinking about it because I think maybe my mom's point there is that, you know, because you did say, you're right, you pointed out that she said this as well. And we've always talked about this, is that we'll end up where we want to end up because we're going to look at ourselves. We're going to look at what our capabilities and our desires are. Now, everybody has the capability of making it to the highest kingdom. Everybody has that. But you have to combine that with your desires. Not everybody has that desire. But when you incorporate the concept of family, where it's like, you know, if you see what your family is going to end up, you may think differently. You know, your desire might change a little bit. And that could be celestial. That could be terrestrial. That could be telestial. Like, that could be any one of the levels of the three kingdoms that we could end up in. And it's just like, well, my family is more like a terrestrial type family. Honestly, I'm okay with that. You know, I don't know. I mean, that's kind of a weird thing to conceptualize right now, but it's interesting to think when you have to consider all the context of everything about how we'll end up. And I do believe that there could be some truth to what my mom is saying. And I kind of want to maybe hear her talk about that more sometime. So just put a pin in that for now. But
Put a feather in it.
Put a feather in your cap for now. But, dude, I wanted to talk about your mom. Because your mom, it to me, and this is like something I knew right when I met her, is such an amazing display of faith. To the and I'm not just saying that. Like, there are some people that you could just tell are faithful people. And it's fun to kind of guess maybe what it says in some people's patriarchal blessing in terms of like what their gifts are. And obviously I've never read your mom's patriarchal blessing and I could be way off here, but I would not be surprised if she's been given the gift of faith. And if she hasn't been given that as a gift, it's certainly something she's cultivated. So regardless, it's a gift that she's utilizing because she's been through so much. You know, at one point she was the sole person in the family, keeping everybody in the family tethered to the gospel in the church. And she always believed, she never doubted, she always had hope. And we talked about that experience about how you flippantly said to her, hey, pray for me, when you're sitting there watching some sports game or something on the couch with your dad on a Sunday and she's leaving to go to church. And you're like, yeah, pray for me, Mom, appreciate it. You know, and she just goes and she looks back and she's like, of course I will. You know, she's and it's just like a woman of faith who always has. She's like, yeah, that's like breathing to me, Brian. Like, I will, of course, I'll pray right. for you. Like, that's like little a-hole. My words, not hers, for the record. But it was an amazing example because it's that type of person where you're like, everybody needs that person close to them in their lives if they're not that person already. Because we always need to be reminded of what it is like to just have solid faith, just believe, and let that demonstrate through your actions. And that's who your mom is, man. And it's so palpable when you hear her talk that it's just like never a doubt, never a doubt. And I love that. It's a beautiful thing. So Sherry Harper, that was such a beautiful takeaway. And it's something that I've noticed right from the start. And honestly, your dad has that to some degree as well. It's a different form. Like, your dad is almost more in like, your dad comes across as like the most loyal guy I've ever met.
No doubt about that.
Yeah. And there's some crossover there with loyalty and faith. And he's like, ever since he's been a member, he's always been loyal to it, you know, and he's believed, but it's cool to see that dynamic between your parents and kind of how they can both grow and be like, kind of have that synergistic relationship between both of them with those characteristics.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing that I got from my mom when she was talking about when she was the only one going, it was like, I just need to go. I just need to go and it'll all work out. Right. And it's not like it's 100% having faith in Heavenly Father and Jesus Christ, like, to influence her husband and her kids' lives. Right. However, it's 100% faith. Like, I'm going to do my part. Right. Like, I'm going to put in all the work. I'm going to do everything that I can do. Right. And then I'm going to stand still and see the Lord's hand at work.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's spot on. Right. Because it all worked out in the end. Right. And I actually gave her crap two, 3 months ago, I think it was, because she hadn't been to church like 2 weeks. I want to say, I think she went and traveled and then she came back. And I text her after like the third week and I go, you not coming today? She goes, no, I'm not feeling good. I was like, all right, well, looks like I'll just hold it down for the family. She goes, I held it down for 10 years. You can hold it down for another Sunday.
That's so funny.
That's oh, so funny. Good. Cause I think I put in there, I was like, I'll pray for you. It's okay.
I'll pray for you. Just know that I'm deeply concerned.
So good. Just throwing it right back at her.
That's hilarious.
So good. So, but no, she's always been that, right? She's always been that rock and that foundation. You talk to anybody in the family, right? Like, whether it's my siblings or my dad, and it's like, she's been the rock and she always will be, right? And we can always lean on her to, you know, be that spiritual giant that we know she is. And she has doubts as you know, or she has struggles. I wouldn't say doubts. She has struggles and lulls in faith and motivation and things like that. But at the same time, like, she's still going to go and do what she needs to do. You know, it's like, she makes it a point, like, I'm going to church. Like, it's not going to be,
There's not going to be any delay, right? She's going to go. So, but yeah, I loved it. I you know, like I said, your mom fired me up. I know my mom fires me up left and right when it comes talking about the church, especially when, you know, we have those good combos. And, you know, I, like I said, I really hope that, you know, it all works out and we can get it out to the masses.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. Yeah. Same. Well, let's transition into a different segment. So we have to touch on this because it's relevant. We've already kind of talked about this on the pod, but I got to touch on it again because there was a big segment on 60 Minutes that talked about the same thing, same guy, same whistleblower that has a problem with the church finances and how they're being used. And here's the thing. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid or whatever. I don't care. Like, I'm biased. I don't care what you say. Like, that's fine. I could be, and I don't care.
Yep.
But I could not help but think that after watching that segment, it's only like 13 minutes. You can YouTube it for those that haven't seen it. I felt like a full-on exoneration to me. Like, I came away from that just being like, oh, so this really is a big nothing burger. Like, I don't see, because it comes down to this man, this whistleblower, David Nielsen, which, by the way, Hall of Fame B-roll footage. Did you notice that? I don't know. Maybe that was my takeaway. Yes. Because I see that the way, like, they got him at his computer with his glasses on, intently looking at things. Then the best part is, like, David Nielsen, it cuts back to him, and they start talking about him again, and they're like, David Nielsen, as he's getting on a motorcycle, who loves to race dirt bikes in his spare time, and then it shows him riding his dirt bike, and I'm like, what in the world is going on? Like, that's all they said about it. That's all they said. And it's like,
yep.
I couldn't help but think if David Nielsen was like, oh, but by the way, make sure we get a shot of me on the bike. And they're like, okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. But anyway, I guess we can mention that. But, you know, this is about the church's finances and you being a whistleblower, right? Yeah, no, it'd just be really cool, though. It was so weird, dude. Like, seeing the B-roll footage of that, and that's literally all they said. David Nielsen, who loves to race motorcycles or whatever in his spare time, thinks this about the church finances. And you're just like,
right,
what the hell did I just watch? I'm a little confused here. Anyway, so let's go back to the actual gist of what's going on here. We have the same guy saying, basically, that the church should lose its nonprofit exempt status because he believes that there's been funds moved from tithing money to help fund things like City Creek, which, by the way, there's been zero proof of that. And then the other one was to bail out the church's insurance company that took a huge hit around 08, 09, and the church claims, right, they paid that money back. And he's like, but if they're going to be a charitable organization, like, they shouldn't be able to bail out private organizations and things like that, which, like, one of the IRS specialists came on and said it's actually a big gray area. Like, you can't actually specifically say yes or no. And they even threw out a percentage that you'd think, like, how much of a nonprofit actually has to be giving away their money in order to maintain that nonprofit status. And for things like churches under nonprofit, it's a little bit more nebulous. They don't actually have a number that you can go off of. And so then it becomes this speculation of, like, okay, well, if we know that they're worth and valued over $100 billion, which I guess we do kind of know that now, we don't know totally for sure. The church has never confirmed anything, but the speculation is probably that that's the case. So then they should give a certain percentage of that to charity. But here's what I actually loved, and this is what I felt like was a form of exoneration in the segment, or this whole 60 Minutes piece, was that it was Bishop Waddell who came on and said, it was Waddell, right? That's his name?
I think
he's
so.
In the, yeah, the first, or whatever you call that, the presiding bishopric. And he gets on there and he says, well, the church has never put a quota up there for saying we need to be this charitable every year or choose this percentage of our funds towards charity. It's, we need to know that what we're contributing to is actually going to be this charitable aspect of who we are, and that we feel good about where we're putting our money. So they're not just throwing money at situations. And then he also said something else that was so huge, which was, as soon as we start being fully transparent, as you guys wish we were, which they, in their minds, they're transparent enough, which I believe in. I think that's totally fine. Is then other people are starting to criticize how we use the money. And that's actually something I said on the podcast about this topic, like 2 or 3 months ago, where it's like, you think about, and this is one of, do you remember the Coney 2012 stuff?
Yeah.
So yep. Coney's this like African thing, like children are getting abducted and whatnot. And there's this huge Facebook movement tied to this Coney thing, which turned out to be an expired charity. And somebody else was glomming onto that, piggybacking off of this. Basically, this, it was a real charity at the time, but it wasn't an issue in 2012. And so this person starts collecting funds for it, and it ends up being completely bogus. What happens if in 2012 the church is fully transparent and people start to say, hey, why aren't you throwing money at this Coney thing? And so the church is like, oh yeah, okay, I guess we'll throw a few million dollars this way. And then they're like, oh, guess what? The whole thing was a fraud. And then you have the detractors saying, what are you doing donating money to fraudulent charities? It's like they would not be able to win in that situation. And so I 100% get what Bishop Waddell is saying. That makes perfect sense to me. And it like once again kind of exonerates the church, and I love that they don't dictate it by hitting actual quotas, by hitting actual numbers. They do it by saying we look at situations, and we look at situations that we can affect and that we know we can change. David Nielsen gets on there and he's like, "Well, they have $1 billion they have money that could change the world." And he's like, "Well, yeah. The church is kind of changing the world." Newsflash. And $1 billion? You don't think $1 billion that they spent? By the way, they said that in the piece of 60 Minutes. They said that the church has given. They give about $1 billion away a year. You don't think that's charitable? Like, what are we talking about here?
Yeah. No, I completely agree. Dude. So, I love the fact that he goes, if we open it up, people will tell the church what to do with the money. Right. And I love the example that you just gave because it's 100% spot on. The other thing that I would think of is BLM.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because right? That's like been proven.
Now all that's come out. Yeah, yeah. That's already been proven that everything
buying
that
was at the helm of the Hollywood Hills, like giving money, like $1 million to a brother because he like DJed for some event or something. And you're like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. So what they're just going to go on a whim with things. I don't want my money to be for a whim. Right. And it's a rainy day fund. Right. Depressions, natural disasters, right. Things like that actually happen. Okay. If the entire US somehow went under, right. We're in this big old massive war. Okay. You're telling me that the church wouldn't be there to help everybody in need.
No, 100% they would. Like, there's no question.
100%, right? And like, you need this money to be able to do this. We're able to buy land. We're able to do things. And that we're buying land, okay? City Creek. Very relative, or it's on Temple Lane or whatever. Yeah, what street is
like
that?
South Temple, I think.
Yeah, okay? It's literally addressed there, okay? If you look at New York City, okay, New York City has their temple. Okay, the surrounding areas around the New York City temple are owned by the church.
Yeah.
Okay, they improve the areas around these temples, right? They build up these areas around these temples because they want it to be aesthetically pleasing, you know, clean, good, right? They're taking care of the grounds and everything, right? Like, 100%, that's a good investment. Right? Why would you not want an amazing neighbor in the temple, right? An amazing neighbor in you know, you own all this land around it. Like, that's what you want. And the biggest nugget.
Yeah.
At the very end. Yep.
I left this for you to share.
The very, very end, right? Got me to watch 13 minutes of footage, right? All you need to do is watch the last minute.
It's so true. It says everything you need to know.
So if the IRS goes after the church, makes them pay these back taxes that they allegedly owe, according to whistleblower, what happens with the money? Well, the IRS gets their cut, and Mr. Whistleblower gets 30% of that money.
Dude.
Yeah. 30% of billions of billions of dollars. I wonder why.
I mean, let's just say it's a billion. Let's just say there's... they have to pay $1 billion in tax money. And
30%.
He gets is $100 million a billion?
I think it's $100 million.
Yeah. So he gets 30 million of that. I mean, that's easy. That's easy math. If it's a billion, he gets 30%, 30 million.
No, he gets 300 million.
Oh, 300 million. You're right.
It's 1,000 million. Okay. He gets 300 million.
And let me guess, whistleblower Dave is going to give all of that to charity, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, no, he's going to change the world.
He's going to change the world. Yeah, no question. Yeah, because he's going to be able to listen to everybody that's saying, hey, send money to this, send money to this. If you're not, you're a bigot. If you're not, you're a terrible person. He's like, oh, wait. You know, anyway. The whole thing just stinks, man. It just stinks. Yeah. And the guy seems so sanctimonious. And I know this is not me, but not being very Christ-like, but still working on it. Like, he gets on there and he's just like, I thought we were going to change the world.
I thought I was working for a charity.
Like, bro, if you don't think the church isn't changing the world, I don't know what to tell you.
Right.
Because it's certainly changed my life.
Anyways.
Yeah, that
right.
100% what my thought was is that this guy was looking for an excuse. He was looking for an excuse to say, you know what, I'm kind of done. I'm kind of done living this. I'm going to go race motorcycles and drink in the desert. Allegedly.
I love it.
Well, this actually segues nicely into the people we can't be friends with segment, actually. So let's go ahead and do that. Do you have one?
No, not this week.
That's all right, because I do. And I just thought of it. And it's legit, too. So people I don't want to be friends with. And something tells me you don't want to be friends with these people either. Are people that say status as opposed to status. Have you ever heard that before? Did you just throw up?
Yeah.
Because that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the whole amateur, right? I hate that.
Yeah.
Or amateur.
Or mature.
He's mature or immature. Like, dude, stop. Yes, 100%. I'm going to add to the words of people that, you know, pronounce them because they're all hoity-toity.
Yeah, so where did I hear status most recently? None other
what's the status?
Than the 60-minute segment we just talked about from Whistleblower Dave talking about the tax-exempt status of the church. Which, what was funny about that is that literally like a minute later, the lady who was doing the reporting, the woman for the 60-minute segment, said 1 minute later, status. She pronounced it status. And I'm just like, this, your hoity-toity is right, man. And
it is, dude. It's turn the nose up. Oh, what's the status?
What's the status?
Shut up, dude.
What's the status of my cut of the church's tax refund?
Yeah.
Or not refund, the tax bill.
Tax bill.
Yeah.
Tax bill.
Well, Dave...
All right, so status and status and immature and mature.
Yeah.
Yeah, add it to it.
Add them all to the freaking list.
I don't get that at all. Yeah. Don't be all, you know, I think the other thing too is like it's not even hoity-toity, it's, oh, I'm educated.
Yeah.
Oh, you read a book? You heard somebody use it one time and you wanted to use it? All right, cool. Good for you, man.
By the way, like along the same lines, I guarantee you David Nielsen pronounces it finance and not finance, which I think everybody that works in finance pronounces it finance. I don't get that, but that's one of those things.
The finances?
Yeah, the finances.
What's the status on the finances?
The status of the finances.
Is it mature or immature?
I'll tell you, man.
Is it a mature account or is it an under mature?
The churches immature account. Very mature, and I'm all for it. That's another thing too. Is that like all you guys do out there with the whistleblower, 60 Minutes, like any of the critics that are like, the church has billions of dollars. It's like, oh, thank goodness, man. They're actually investing my tithing money and making it better. Yeah, way better than anything the government could do with my tax money, obviously. So like. Should we not be praising the fact that there's an organization out there that said, hey, all we need is 10% and we're going to turn it into, it's going to be like what, 20x? I don't even know. I mean, obviously I don't know those numbers, probably not quite 20x, but still it's like, they're so careful with that money. And you're like, how are we not talking about the fact that the church is incredible at investing? Like, that's what I want to know.
I agree, man. You're preaching to the choir there, bud.
Yeah, how do I get the portfolio just so I can emulate it? My goodness.
Yeah, can I just keep putting – can I put more in?
Yeah.
Can I put my investments in?
Actually, now I am going to be a critic of the church. The critique of the church that I have is we need to add a line on the tithing slip that says invest like you, and just how much money do you want to put into our investment fund so you could just get a return out. Like, if I could make my – essentially – my S&P 500 or whatever retirement fund and just put that, just let the church handle it. Like that's where I will call out the church for being terrible.
Yeah.
That they don't give that opportunity for me.
I love it. They even related it back to that. They were like the checkings account, right? The in and outs of everyday stuff, right? Buildings, humanitarian, all the things like that. And they were like, but this is like their retirement fund. You're like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that sounds like a great retirement fund. Like, cool, let's do it.
I'm investing in Zion, dude. Like, right. I'm hoping that this is just going to give me a plot of land that I need to survive the millennium and be okay. And, like, people are, like, tongue-in-cheek about the second coming thing. And he's like, but here's the thing. I think a lot of those members really believe in it. It's like, yeah, I'm one. I do.
Yeah, 100%. Like, thank you. Like, yeah.
I don't know how good our money will be then, but if it can do something, I'm all for it.
Right, but even the bishop of the first ward,
Waddell, whatever, yeah, the presiding bishopric. Yeah.
But he goes. It's not. We do believe that, but it's more for like financial crisis, you know, like Great Depressions, like you know, and he explained that, and I'm like, yeah, 100%. Like, why would it not be? Like, what?
Yeah.
So, All right. We keep getting on that.
No, I can't help myself.
I can't help myself either. On to spiritual thoughts. So obviously this was going to be our mom segment, TBD on that. But you want me to start or you want to start?
I'll go. I feel like you've got a good one. I've got stuff that I've just been reading lately. Okay. So let's end with yours.
All right.
But I've been reading an Alma still. Do about a chapter to two chapters a day is all, but I love kind of searching things out and adding to it from our favorite scripture app, scriptures.byu.edu. Anyway, so the chapters that I've been reading lately have been Alma and Amulek, preaching to the Zoramites, which by the way, and I'm gonna go in depth with you on this another time, just personally, just in our own little personal study and things like that, because there's some fascinating political aspect. Actually, you know what? I will share part of this. I already did share it with you, so I'll make this mine today because the way it parallels today is just mind-blowing, and I didn't notice it until I read it last week. But in Alma, let's see. What is it? Alma 8? No, sorry.
Thought it was 7.
Nope, it was Alma 11.
11.
7:11:20. Alma 7:11:20. No, sorry. Alma 11:20. And this is what it says when it's talking about how the Zoramites. So the Zoramites were really going after Alma and Amulek. To add a little context here, Alma and Amulek obviously are preaching to the people, to Ammonihah. And there's a huge political divide there. And they specifically point out to Alma the Younger, they say, we know you were chief judge, but you're not anymore. So we don't have to adhere to whatever it is you're trying to tell us. And Alma's like, well, of course not. Like, I wouldn't, you know, no one has to do this by force. I'm just telling you, this is a better life. So clearly there's like a political divide there that they're referencing. But more, even more than that, there's an ideological divide. And I think those two things are actually tied together when you get down to it. But there's an ideological divide with how the Zoramites want to believe. And that affects their political system. And so they talk about this when Alma and Amulek are being questioned by a bunch of lawyers and judges. And this is where the monetary system is shared too in the Book of Mormon, because later Zeezrom offers them a bunch of money to deny God. And of course they don't, and they're okay. But I hope I'm not all over the place here. But ultimately, as they're being questioned, it talks about how these judges and these these lawyers are paid. And this is the verse that stood out to me where I was like, oh my gosh. Alma 11:20, it says, they received their wages according to their employ. Therefore, they did stir up the people to riotings and all manner of disturbances and wickedness, that they might have more employ, that they might get money according to the suits which were brought before them. Therefore, they did stir up the people against Alma and Amulek. And I'm sitting there going, oh my gosh. Like, is this not what we're seeing? Is this not what we're seeing with politics? Specific politicians saying, go out and riot, go out and do this, go out and do that. Because these politicians are incentivized by having a ton of problems in society, by people that be there being political unrest. Why? Because they get more money, dude. And when you think about it at the bare level, we know this, right? We know this. I'm not saying that, like, there's a bonus paid out to politicians because people are rioting in the streets. I mean, I do think there are monetary incentives that come downstream from all that. But we don't even not downstream, we know this happens, that the media and prosecutors, attorneys, police force have a vested interest in stirring the pot. This is something we all knew, but it's also a tale as old as time. Isn't it well known that not only the news monetary value is directly tied to the eyes on the screen, but more specifically the prosecuting attorneys, the police who are incentivized to make arrests, the judges to convict, etc. The fact that we know policemen have to hit a quota to give out tickets should tell you everything you need to know about this. Because if you actually wanted society to be high functioning, you would say, hey, we want people to live better. We don't want you to catch them. Like, if you, we do want to incentivize good behavior. So if it means having to enforce the law where appropriate, then do it. But do not create areas in which people will have to be cited for breaking the law. Anyway, this is a quote from Elder Ballard in October 2003. So 20 years ago, basically. And he says, conspiring men and women intent on gain rather than goodness stir up the people to all manner of wickedness, preventing the noble uses to which the media could be employed. The new morality preached from the media's pulpit is nothing more than the old immorality. It attacks religion. It undermines the family. It turns virtue into vice and vice into virtue. It assaults the senses and batters the soul with messages and images that are neither virtuous nor lovely nor of good report nor praiseworthy. The time has come when members of the church need to speak out and join with the many other concerned people in opposition to the offensive, destructive, and mean-spirited media influence that is sweeping over the earth. 20 freaking years ago, dude.
2003, bro. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. No, we talked about this last week. I absolutely love this. Like, it fired me up. It still fired me up. You're doing exactly what we should all be doing, right? Likening the scriptures to our lives, and it's spot on, right? Like, but that's what's so cool about the Book of Mormon, right? Like, we see everything, right? We're all creatures of habit, right?
Human, like, nature.
We're all being made human nature, right? We were built in the likeness of our Heavenly Father, right? From the beginning of time, right? We are all made by His hand, right? So that means He made us a certain way. Right? Human nature, right? It always is going to happen, man. It's crazy. It's crazy. I loved it. I love it, man. It's such a good scripture because, like, if you're in that mindset, you're able to liken the scriptures to yourself, you can see those things. Yeah. So, mine is in Alma as well. Thanks to Harper introducing this section to me, because I was going through a little bit of a self-doubt when you introduced this to me, and not even a self-doubt, but just a, you know,
yeah, self-doubt's probably
criticism of my own being.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
being a little harder,
just a self-criticism. Yeah. Yeah. And not wanting to be holier than thou, not wanting to be, you know, people thinking that I was turning my nose up at them, by any means, because of my past and things like that. I was just being, you know, happy and excited for where I am trending and where I was trending and still to this day am trending. But it's, you know, you don't want people to feel on the outs being thinking that I was thinking I was better than them because I made a life change. Right. And you brought up Alma 26:12,
And I'll ask you this question. Is there a better scripture than Alma 26:12? No, there's not. Okay. I'll answer you for you.
I don't want to get a long-winded discussion about what better means, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I'll let you have this one.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, I win, right. You lose.
It's your time. You have the floor.
So this is the – you're going to have to help me out with this anyways. Glories in the Lord. The faithful are strengthened by the Lord and are given knowledge by faith. Men may bring thousands of souls unto repentance. Okay. All right. So they just left, right? They just left the – you're going to have to help me out with the timeline on this one, on 26, Alma 26.
Oh, this was Ammon going to get his brethren that were in prison, and like they preached all together. Right. This was after, obviously, Lamoni and Ammon had their thing. So Ammon and Lamoni basically go to free Aaron and the rest of Ammon's – I think it's Aaron, Omni, and Himner – and they get released from prison, and then they end up converting a bunch of Lamanites from there, like tons. And okay. Alma and Amulek at this time have left Ammonihah and are coming back on a different path, and they happen to...
And they're in, and their leavings are...
No, I think they're leaving Ammonihah. They're done...
For we had not come out of
land. Well, no, that was more talking about the roots of where they came from. Like, that's where like they started their mission from Zarahemla. But literally, their meetup happens after Alma and Amulek have leaving Ammonihah, I believe.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So I'm going to read 12 is the main one. I'm going to actually start 8. Blessed be the name of our God. Let us sing to his praise. Yea, let us give thanks to his holy name, for he doth work righteousness forever. They were delivered. They have been racked with hatred against us. Yea, that they would also have been strangers to God. And then in 10, it came to pass that when Ammon had said these words, his brother Aaron rebuked him, saying, Ammon, I fear that thy joy doth carry thee away unto boasting. And in 11, but Ammon said unto him, I do not boast in my own strength, nor in my own wisdom, but behold, my joy is full. Yea, my heart is brim with joy, and I will rejoice in my God. 12, and this is the verses of all verses, in my opinion. Yea, I know that I am nothing. As to my strength, I am weak. Therefore, I will not boast of myself, but I will boast of my God. For in his strength, I can do all things. Yea, behold, many mighty miracles we have wrought in this land, for which we will praise his name forever. And that, like, powerful, powerful scripture, right, is literally, was literally what I was going through, right? Because I felt like people may be thinking that I am thinking I'm holier than thou, you know, Peter Priesthood, Molly Mormon, da-da-da-da-da, right? However, and you clarified this right in the moment with me. It was, hey, you're feeling that abutting joy, right? You're feeling the power of Heavenly Father and Jesus Christ in your life, right? Like, that's the whole point, right? And if anybody like questioned you, like Aaron or Aaron did to Ammon, right? Like, say exactly what Ammon said, right? Ammon was being zealous in the moment. He's like, no, I'm not boasting of myself. I'm not saying that he's did all these things on my own. This has nothing to do with me.
I'm merely a facilitator. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm here being, you know, being a vessel, being a messenger for him. And I do not boast of myself. I boast of my God. I see his strength and I can do all things, you know, many mighty miracles, wrought this land. It's just like, it's absolutely just so, so powerful. And that's like one verse that I am actually going to memorize so that I have that in my like repertoire whenever I need it. Right. Like, so, Ammon 26:12. I think it's one of the best scriptures of all time. And it relates back to, Philippians, was it 1:4 or whatever it is. I can do all things through the power of the Lord. Yeah. So
I don't know where that is. That might be I don't know, but yeah, that's obviously Old
Testament. I think very it is.
Well-known scripture.
Yeah. So that's mine.
Well, thanks for sharing, man. I could see it in you. I could see it in you as you were talking about that. Like, that obviously has had a profound effect on you, but more so that it's so relatable and it gets you feeling just happy and zealous again, which is what this is all about, man.
Yeah. Philippians 4:13. Nice. I can do all things through Christ, which strengthened me. Man.
Well done.
There you go.
All right, brother. Well, I think that's a wrap. Like I said, we'll try and recover that Mother's Day stuff. And I think there's a scenario in which that can happen. I'm still working with Riverside to get that done, but we'll go from there. But solid sesh, brother.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Let's do it again next week.
Yeah, let's do it again next week. Sounds good. Plan on it. Mark it down. The people need us. Got to give the people what they want.
Well, we actually might be able to record together.
That's what I'm kind of planning on.
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe Monday we might
That. And if that's the case, we may have a special guest with us as well that I've not even told you about. So, I mean, you've heard about him and we talked about him, but that might be when it happens because I'd like to do it in person if we could.
All right. Perfect.
All right, brother.
Well, I'm excited for next week, and I hope everybody else that is listening is as excited as I am.
Gear up, friends. Gear up. We back. Latter Day Takes may take a week off randomly, but we always come back.
We're here.
All right, brother. Thanks for everything. Appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you, man. Everybody have a good week, and we'll see you next week.
That'll do it for today's episode. Thanks for checking in, everyone. If you liked what you heard today, I ask super quickly if you could just follow or subscribe to the podcast, give it a rating, give it a review, tell your friends about it. All of that stuff helps me quite a bit. Watching the growth has been super humbling and motivating to keep going, and I could not possibly appreciate all of you more.
Sitting on my table, I'm watching as everything's changing my mind, going to a different time. Old love, I remember falling so madly. There must have been magic in the valley and a rhythm in the night. 'Cause I could almost see it. Did you fade right out of view? If it takes time.